Welcome to the Dare to Wealth podcast. This is Guilherme, and I will be your host today. Today's guest is Dr. David Renault, veterinary epidemiologist in the Department of Population Medicine at the Ontario Veterinary College. And we will talk about his research program on risk factors and management strategies to improve calf health and welfare. So, Dave, thank you very much for taking the time to participate. And perhaps you could start telling us a little bit about your story, your background, and your experience with epidemiology and dairy farming.
Sure. Well, first off, thanks for having me. Really happy to be here today and share some of the work we've been doing over the past few years here at Guelph. Yeah, so kind of my background, I have three Guelph degrees. I did my undergrad here, did my vet schooling here, and then also did my PhD as well. Through kind of my experiences being a veterinarian, I practiced for 2 years full time. And during those 2 years, I kind of identified that there's probably some opportunity with regard to calf health and some challenges that existed there in the industry. So that kind of drove me to do my PhD, and largely is why I kind of focused on calves even after my PhD and really dove pretty deep into the epidemiology of disease and how to manage disease and why disease happens and those types of questions.
Yeah, that's great. So the first topic of this podcast, we will talk a little bit about some clinical disease and diagnosis and prevalence of this disease. And I believe that diarrhea and pneumonia are the most prevalent diseases in calves, right? So how could producers properly diagnose sick calves when we talk about diarrhea and pneumonia?
Yeah, so with diarrhea, I think the easiest way to diagnose it is by evaluating the calf's feces. I think that's the easiest way to do it. The challenge is sometimes in group housing, it can be quite difficult to diagnose that by just trying to look in the pen and which calf did that come from. So I think often we have to use other indicators of disease for diagnosis of diarrhea in particular, such as reductions in milk consumption, maybe reductions in the speed at which they drink, maybe they're a little bit lethargic. Because we found in some of the research that we've done that looking at milk consumption or looking at drinking speed, even their number of steps that they take per day, that can be a good early indicator that the calf is going to become sick or is sick. So I think using some of those behaviors to help flag calves that you need to further examine, whether it's looking at their feces, doing a stimulating them to defecate and then evaluating their fecal consistency, or whether it's evaluating them for respiratory disease, I think those are good things to consider. For respiratory disease, I think that's a little bit easier to diagnose just because we don't have to rely on seeing them basically poop. We can just go and evaluate their clinical signs like nasal discharge, eye discharge, elevated breathing rate, coughing, rectal temperature, those types of things to better define or diagnose disease.
Yes, that's great. And so because we are talking about diarrhea and pneumonia, what do you think that would be some examples of high and low incidence rates of those diseases?
Yeah, so the Dairy Calf and Heifer Association, which is a US-based association, they developed some kind of gold standards or targets that you should achieve with regard to both respiratory disease and diarrhea. And I believe in their template, it's something like less than 10% of calves should be treated for diarrhea and less than 15% of calves should be treated for respiratory disease. I think those are pretty achievable goals, I think, for most producers. If we look at our Canadian data, this is a data set from about 150 farms across Canada. About probably 30% of calves get treated for disease on average. So we still have an opportunity, I think, to reduce some of our burden of disease to hopefully improve productivity in these calves moving forward.
Yes, that's right. And another important part is data records, right? We're going to talk about it later. But because we are talking about those diseases, we also know that there are some short and long-term impacts of those diseases, right? So what would be the effects of those diseases on mortality and also on growth of calves?
Yeah, so for both diarrhea and respiratory disease, obviously, if you have the disease, you have an increased risk of that calf dying. And so, yeah, that's a a big impact. I think if you have calves that are dying, that's a major impact on the dairy, also a major impact for animal welfare as well. Beyond that, looking at kind of consequences of disease, if you have a calf, let's say you go in and evaluate a calf that has diarrhea today, that calf is probably going to gain less, probably about 100 grams per day less comparatively to a calf that's totally healthy. So if you think about that, that's a pretty substantial weight loss that happens over a very short period of time. The other important consideration when you have diarrhea as well is that those calves that have diarrhea are also much more likely to develop respiratory disease. So it's kind of a bit of a gateway disease. Got diarrhea, likely that calf's going to get respiratory disease, probably because we are impacting the immune system of a calf with diarrhea, and we're increasing the risk that we can have other pathogens kind of cause disease in that calf with respiratory disease. Other consequences of respiratory disease in particular is also reduced growth, probably more profound reductions in growth when you have respiratory disease, probably around that 200 grams per day reduction. And also you have many kind of long-term implications for both the diseases as well. So diarrhea, you have reduction. Many studies have found a reduction in milk production for calves, about 325 kilograms reduction. Same for respiratory disease. So not only do we see these short-term impacts in terms of reduction in growth, but also these really substantial long-term impacts that I think really affect the profitability of a dairy herd in particular.
That's very interesting, Dave. I like that you mentioned that diarrhea kind of opens the way to another diseases, right? And I have another question. Have you heard anything about if long-term effects on reproduction as well? For example, pregnancy rate of these heifers?
Yeah, so there's an interesting study that a person named Angel Bueyu, who's at Michigan State University, did, where he followed 2,200 calves, I think, to the end of their first lactation, and then looked at the impact of treating these calves for diarrhea or pneumonia in pre-weaning periods, so first 60 days of life. And in that study, what he found was that for calves that were treated for diarrhea, they had a lower conception rate at their first breeding as a heifer. So it has clear reproductive effects. It delayed their time to first calving, so likely because they're not as likely to conceive. So some issues there. And I think you're the repro guy, so you can probably talk more about the physiology for why that is. But likely it's because we have reduced growth rates, delay puberty, and that's probably why we see some of those reductions in conception rate.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. Yes, that's quite interesting to see those long-term effects. And we are going to talk about prevention, right, to avoid this. But since we are talking about diarrhea and perhaps some respiratory problems, but I heard that you did a study where you looked at some pathogens, right, that are involved with some of the disease. I think it was diarrhea. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah, we've done both diarrhea and respiratory disease.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
And what did you see about the pathogens? Like, is there like one that's more like common or that producers should pay more attention or?
Yeah. So we've done some surveys of about 100 farms in Ontario. And we went up to these farms and we took fecal samples and we also took nasopharyngeal swabs, which is a really fancy way of saying we took a swab of their kind of nostrils to look for a presence of different pathogens. And when we did that, we found that a fairly high level of farms were infected with Cryptosporidium parvum, so which is a parasite very, very common out there in the industry, or we found it was quite common anyway. About 67% of farms were positive for Cryptosporidium parvum. And then we also looked at many different respiratory pathogens. Manhemia, Pastorella were very common on the farms that we evaluated. And also Mycoplasma bovis was found to be quite common too. So we have a pretty wide array of different pathogens that are out there in the dairy industry that cause either diarrhea or respiratory disease. And then we've also looked at a new emerging pathogen too, which is called Salmonella Dublin, which also has been known to cause respiratory disease as well.
That's great, Dave. And like, still talking a little bit about those pathogens, do you think that identifying the pathogen would help for the treatment, or perhaps would help like with any strategy at the farm to avoid it? Or
yeah, I'd say sometimes it can be helpful, especially if farmers are dealing with kind of losses or cases that they're really not sure what it is, it's probably worth testing and just seeing what pathogen is present, especially if you're having high levels of mortality, like you're having calves that you're not sure why they're dying or things like that. It's probably worthwhile having a veterinarian come take some samples and just make sure that either it's or really confirm what pathogen you're dealing with, because there are, depending on the pathogen, there are some different things that you can do to better control it.
Now, that's great. That's very interesting. Yeah. So my last question in this first section, Dave, would be, other, in addition to diarrhea and pneumonia, are there any other diseases that producers should be aware of? Are there like additional things that we are not paying attention, perhaps?
I think those are probably the most predominant ones that you'd see. With respiratory disease, it's also important to note that you might see some disease clinically, like you see the calf actually sick, but there's also some subclinical changes where you're not actually, you maybe aren't seeing these signs. So if you do, for example, lung ultrasound on your calves, that can be a good way to identify some subclinical disease they might have for lungs. Another important one too, that is probably the third most common disease is umbilical infections. So can be quite common on some farms where you have infection of the umbilical stump, and that can lead to many consequences that we talked about as well, reduced growth, reduced kind of long-term productivity in those animals. So that's another one to go evaluate, especially if you have a calf that you're not sure why it's sick. You've maybe looked for that fecal consistency. You've looked for signs of respiratory disease. Just have a feel of its umbilical stump and see if it's infected, because sometimes that can also be a reason that that calf's not doing well.
Okay, great. Yeah, so let's jump to the second section, which would be management of clinical diseases. And we talked a little bit about data records, right? Like, this is very important, and I would like to know your opinion on that. So how the data is being recorded, and also if you have any advice on how it should be recorded. For example, if you have a recommendation of a chart or another thing that producers could use to improve data records.
Yeah, I think records can be tough for calves. And the reason I think it can be tough for calves is that we don't worry about withdrawal times for calves, because we're going to treat a heifer calf. It's going to stay on the farm for an extended period of time. So we're not too worried about the meat or obviously milk withhold. They're not milking, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
As a consequence, I think what happens is maybe we don't record that as well. So because I'm not worried about the meat or milk withhold times, I'm not going to put a recording in place to capture that data. I think that not capturing the data is problematic, because then you can't look back and see how well are we doing in terms of our level of disease. And in a study that we did that was led by my former PhD student, Tamaki Uma, she went and tried to use records from 150 farms from across Canada, and was only able to get really reasonable calf information from about half of them. Largely because either people weren't recording disease, or they're using records that were in a format that we couldn't actually use. So I think it's really important that we record disease so that we can identify when we're not meeting those goals, like 10% for diarrhea, 15% for pneumonia. And the challenge also on smaller farms is that maybe the average Ontario herd is going to have maybe 50 heifers born a year, maybe a little bit less. So if we're treating, you know, 20% of our heifers, that's really not too many when you think about it over the entire period of the year. So unless you have those records, you can't really dig back into seeing how well your farm's doing. So if you're thinking about capturing data, or if you are capturing data, I think it's really important that you do it in a format that is easily accessible, meaning that it's either in a digital format, you can export it really easily into Excel or some other program to see that information quite well. We found in our study that we did, farms that had information written down, is almost impossible to get the information out, because either the pages were destroyed, the writing wasn't clear. Yeah, it's just really difficult to use written records, I think. because it's also quite time consuming to pull it out as well.
Yes.
So I think kind of moving forward, I think it'd be great if people or producers started thinking about how can they record it in a more usable format, whether it's through using some of the herd management softwares that are available, whether it's just simply recording it in an Excel spreadsheet or other spreadsheet. I have a couple of producers that are doing that currently, but something that's easy to access, easy to use, so that we can really see how well we're doing with calf health management.
Yes, that's great, especially because you mentioned about short and long-term effects of those diseases, right? So it's important to know which animals had any kind of problem, and then perhaps this is related to another problem that we're seeing far later on in life, right? So another topic on diseases is antimicrobials, right? So we are stepping away from the use of antimicrobials, and I would like to hear your opinion about alternative strategies for treatment, or perhaps strategies to use less antimicrobials, and perhaps using just anti-inflammatories, or anything that you could like share with us on this topic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a big industry push that we should be more using our antimicrobials more appropriately. And I think that's fair. I think if we look across, whether it's human medicine, whether it's veterinary medicine, I think there is lots of opportunity to improve how we're using antibiotics or antimicrobials, and hopefully reducing that use. Keep quoting studies, but this is another one that we did with a former PhD student, Tamaki. And in this study, what she did was she looked at the total amount of antimicrobials used on about 75 farms across Canada. And then we looked at the level of antimicrobial resistance bacteria, or antimicrobial resistant bacteria that are being shed by calves. And we found that high users of antimicrobials also had higher levels of antimicrobial resistance. So I think it's an important message that, you know, maybe antimicrobial resistance is a bit of a wishy-washy idea, and maybe, you know, it's important in humans and that kind of thing, but it's also important for your calves. If you're treating your calves a lot, you're also going to see higher levels of resistance that develop. And that means your treatments are going to be less effective. So I think we should really focus in on how can we use our antimicrobials properly so that we don't increase resistance. In terms of treatments for diarrhea, probably most cases of diarrhea don't need an antibiotic treatment or antimicrobial treatment. I think that's shown pretty consistently in the literature out there. Probably maybe anywhere between 10 to 30% of calves probably require one. So I think we want to think strategically about which calves do actually need it. And it's likely those calves that maybe they're dull, they're depressed, they maybe have an elevated rectal temperature. So maybe using a combination of different clinical signs might be appropriate to justify using an antimicrobial. In terms of alternatives, using a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory like meloxicam at the onset of diarrhea has actually been shown to help with resolution. So that's a good non-antibiotic alternative that you can give to calves at the onset of diarrhea that really helps them recover. And we've also done some recent work showing that colostrum can also be helpful as a treatment for diarrhea as well. So this is a study that was done by a former master's student and actually current PhD student, Javi Carter. And in this study, what she did was she treated calves at the onset of diarrhea with colostrum, a mixture of colostrum and milk replacer. And what we found is that calves that were supplemented with this colostrum milk replacer mix for 8 consecutive feedings resolved diarrhea much sooner, about 2 days sooner, and also grew about 100 grams per day more comparatively to calves that just received their regular milk replacer diet. So perhaps kind of investigating strategies like that, which don't involve antimicrobials, can really help hopefully help to reduce some of the productivity losses that I talked about before.
Yeah, that's interesting. And there are also some costs involved on that, right? So even for the producer, it's better not to use, right?
Yeah, like for sure. Antimicrobials, I think they're fairly inexpensive. And I think that also is probably why that they're used, I think. But I think if we look at some of these alternative treatments like meloxicam, like colostrum, yeah, there's a cost associated with doing those treatments. But if you look at the better resolution, the improved average daily gain that we've saw in colostrum, those treatments actually make sense. They pencil out when you look at the long-term future of that calf. and also labor and all those other things that go along with it as well.
Nice, great. I also know that you have some research on evaluating behavior and in a way that you can predict diseases, right? So I was just wondering, which type of technology would you use to evaluate the calves and to try to predict the disease that's going to come the next days?
Yeah, so the thing that we predominantly look at is their milk intake or drinking speed or number of visits to an automated calf feeder. So we get all this data from an automated calf feeder. And what we found in the past is that calves that had a reduction in milk consumption, reduction in drinking speed, reduction in number of visits to the feeder are at greater risk to develop disease in the days following that. So we can predict diarrhea fairly well just by using those predictors. About a day before they show clinical signs, we can identify that that calf's going to get sick. So that's kind of interesting, I think really cool. For producers that don't have an automated feeder, that doesn't mean that you can't look at those behaviors or you can't use this information. I think I would use the information in that when you deliver milk to a calf, if they're not consuming all their milk, if they're not drinking as fast as their peers, those are probably good calves to look at because maybe they have disease or are going to develop disease. And we've been really focusing in on this area, trying to think about, okay, if we can identify the calf one day before it shows clinical signs of diarrhea, can we either prevent that calf from getting sick or can we reduce the severity of disease? So a previous study done by Allison Welk, who's a current PhD student, she found that giving meloxicam, which is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory or painkiller, when the calves kind of had that change in their behavior, it led to a little bit lower severity of disease. So that could be a potential intervention to give to calves that have that reduction in milk intake or reduction in drinking speed compared to their peers.
That's interesting. So for cows, we have some collars to track rumination or activity, right? Accelerometers. Have you seen anything on activity tracking of calves to see if how many movements they're doing per day or perhaps how much they are walking in the day?
Yeah, we've done some work with looking at pedometers or activity monitors in calves and trying to predict their disease. And we published a paper last year that found that calves that had a reduction in kind of number of steps that they took per day or motion index, which is another metric that's produced by a lot of these pedometers, we could predict, yeah, basically, we could predict that they're going to get diarrhea about, again, kind of like one day before they show clinical signs. So they have a very clear reduction in the number of steps that they have per day. And likely this is all related to a thing called sickness behavior. And what sickness behavior is, it's like a physiological cascade of all these events that happen in animals' bodies as they prepare their body to become sick. So they have an infection or injury response, and it leads to all these changes. So I'm sure like you or like myself, when I get sick or I'm starting to feel sick, I'm probably not eating as much. I'm probably starting to sit on the couch a little bit more. Maybe I'm watching Netflix a little bit more. So I make a lot of changes in my behavior, and the same thing's happening with calves. So the nice part is we can use some of these sickness behaviors to help us predict that calf is going to get disease. And that's where an area that we're really working on a lot, largely led by Allison Welk, again, PhD student, who's really trying to explore that a little bit more to develop some practical solutions for producers to hopefully intervene before calves even get sick.
That's great. And it's nice to know that you have some data on when you predict the disease a few days before you take action, right? You can see some good effects of this in the long term. So that's pretty interesting. Okay, so the last topic is prevention, and perhaps this is the most important thing, right, Dave? You talked a little bit about colostrum. We also know that colostrum feeding is very important for passive immunity. And I would like to know, what's your recommendation on the quality or duration or the amount of colostrum that should be fed for calves?
Yeah, so colostrum is probably the single most important thing that you can do. And I'm sure many of the people listening to this podcast are probably rolling their eyes back, but it really is. I think we've done a lot of studies over the past few years looking at different things that you could do, management strategies, that type of thing. but it really all comes back to colostrum. If you can get colostrum into a calf well, you're going to prevent a lot of challenges in the future. So really, really critical. In the work that we've done, we found that probably feeding a meal of probably around 4 liters at the first feeding is good. That's a good amount to feed to really maximize passive immunity. We've also found that 2 feedings of colostrum also can contribute to improving passive immunity and reducing the risk of disease. So I'd say, like, for quantity, you probably want to think about at the first meal, 4 liters, but you also want to think about doing a second meal, probably within the first 12 hours, to also maximize the amount of passive immunity that you get. In terms of colostrum quality, I think it's also really important to measure. So we have lots of ways that we can measure colostrum quality on farm using either an optical, so looking under a light, or a digital, so it's putting a drop onto a reader, a Brix refractometer. And if we can feed high quality colostrum to calves, which is greater than 22% on the Brix scale, if you're using a Brix refractometer, or if you're actually measuring it, which no one's doing, but it's about 50 grams per liter of IgG in colostrum. If you can get to those levels, it's also really likely you're going to achieve those high levels of passive immunity as well. So those 2 things are really, really critical to having success. Other thing that's critical, and this is largely led by Mike Steele's group, who's also at the University of Guelph, he's looked a little bit at quickness. Making sure that you're feeding it as quickly as possible is also really important. And then the final thing to consider is cleanliness, making sure that you don't have high levels of bacteria in your colostrum. So think about your hygiene practices when you're collecting the colostrum for the cow. So making sure that her teats are clean, the bucket you're collecting the colostrum into the cow is clean, your feeding equipment is clean, all that kind of stuff. Because if you have really high levels of bacteria in your colostrum, what ultimately happens is your immunoglobulins, which are really important to protect against disease, bind to those bacteria, and they don't get absorbed into the circulation of the calf, which can obviously reduce or increase, I guess, the risk that they're going to get disease.
Right. And I also know, Dave, that you have a really nice opinion on evaluating the effectiveness of colostrum feeding, right? So it's very important to feed it properly, right? The amount, the duration, good quality colostrum, like you mentioned, but it would be interesting as well to evaluate if this is working, right?
Yeah, like, I think that's really important. And one of the first steps that I think you should do is, if you're thinking about how good is my colostrum management program, probably the most important thing that you can do right now is really testing it. And the way that you can test it is you can take blood samples from calves that are probably between 1 to 7 days of age. Either have yourself or your vet do it. You spin the blood down in a centrifuge, and then you pull out the serum, put it onto one of those refractometers that I talked about before, and then it gives you an answer in terms of how good is that calf in terms of their passive immunity, or how good is your colostrum management program. So ideally, you want to achieve, you know, several goals in terms of having less than 10% of your calves being less than 5.1 grams per deciliter on your serum total protein, or less than 10 grams per liter in IgG. So there's many different goals that you can strive to achieve. But the nice part is you can measure it. It's quite easy to measure. And that gives you a good baseline for how good are you doing with your colostrum management program? And do you actually need to make changes?
Yes, that's pretty interesting. Another question that I have, Dave, is on the dams. So have you seen anything, any effect of the model on the diseases that the calf may gonna have? So is there a relationship between the dam and the health or health disorders of the calves?
Yeah, I haven't studied this at all, but I think Eduardo Ribeiro has studied this quite a bit and has found a relationship between calves that get disease and the risk of their calves getting disease. So I think there's a lot of things to that. And I think we don't often appreciate the impact that the nutrition of the dam has during the dry cow period and the how that kind of influences the success of the calf. So I think that's a good area to study a little bit further, because I think that's an important one. How we're managing during gestation that calf can be really important to the success of that animal when she's born.
That's right. I agree with you. And what would be your recommendations, Dave, on management practices to reduce like pathogen exposure? For example, I believe that simple things like cleaning and bedding or the type of bedding could help, right? So perhaps you could just talk a little bit about what simple steps producers could take to make like a big difference.
Yeah, like I think cleanliness, like you mentioned, is really crucial. So having a clean environment that calves are born into, really important, not only for some of the diseases that I talked about before, like crypto, rotavirus, coronavirus, those types of things that cause diarrhea, but also for Salmonella Dublin. Clean calving area is really crucial. That's where a lot of the transmission happens for Salmonella Dublin, as for Yoni's disease and other things like that. So having a really clean maternity area is crucial. So well bedded, not having a lot of manure contamination are all important points to consider. After the move from the calving area into the calf housing, also you want that to be clean. So if you're not cleaning between calves, that's a good risk for transmission of some of the pathogens, like many of the diarrhea causing pathogens. So cleaning them between calves can be important. So pressure washing or rinsing, using some type of soap or some type of disinfectant, and then letting it dry can be an important way that you can reduce the contamination of the calf housing.
Okay, great. And I think that, so we talked about the effects of the dam, the effects of the environment, right? So those are risk factors. And I believe that another risk factor would be animal movement, right? So what have you seen on this topic? And the effect of this on clinical diseases of calves or pathogens in the environment.
Like, are you thinking animal movement within farm or between farms?
Yes, I believe that both, like, I believe that both can affect, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so animal movement within farm is important. An older study that was done at Guelph by Catalina Maderno-Galarza when she was here doing her PhD found that you don't want to move calves into group housing too young. So in her study, she found that movement at 5 days of age into group housing is much better than moving them at 24 hours of age in terms of reducing diarrhea severity. So that's an important consideration. You probably also want to think about when you have sick calves, maybe doing some sort of isolation, because usually when you have sick calves, they're shedding pathogens at a really high level into the environment and likely infecting other calves, especially younger susceptible calves to that disease. So isolating the sick calves, having an area where you can do that, pull that calf out of the group, isolate them until they're doing better and maybe drinking milk better, can be an important consideration. For between farm movement, that's also a good risk factor for a lot of disease spread. So having not buying in animals from unknown sources or unknown disease status can be, an important thing to consider. We found in our work that for Salmonella Dublin, purchasing animals or bringing in animals was a really big risk factor for the spread of that particular disease. So I think whenever you're buying animals, it's important to make sure you're buying it from a reputable source that doesn't have a lot of those diseases like Salmonella Dublin, like Yoni's disease, like leukosis, and many of the other pathogens as well. And testing those animals before their introduction is important.
Yes, well, that's great, Dave. I just have like a final question, and perhaps if there is something that we didn't talk about, you can comment on that as well. But I was just wondering what would be your opinion, and what do you think that are the big challenges on raising calves, or what do you think that it's going to be like the big changes that we're going to see over the years, or important things that we should think about? Just an overview of some topics that we already talked about, right?
Yeah, like I think some of the hot button topics that are coming up and will continue to come up is some of the changes that are happening with the new code of practice. So in case you're not aware, there's been some changes in terms of group housing of calves. They need to be pair housed. So at least pair housed or group housed by 3 weeks or 4 weeks of age, 3 or 4 weeks of age. Don't quote me on that exact time frame. But they'll need to at least adapt to a group housing system. So that's a really important change. And I think a lot of farmers are going to experience that change, whether it's good or bad. But I think it's good for the calf welfare. I think there's lots of studies showing the improvements in even productivity of those animals, so better growth, better grain intake. So I think there's some really big benefits. But I think for producers that are doing individual housing, that's going to be a big adjustment. Other things that I think are being researched now include cow-calf separation. So also another hot button topic that I'm sure many farmers that are listening or industry people that are listening to this would have heard about. But I think a lot of consumers are becoming more aware that we're separating the calf from the cow within hours after they're born. And yeah, there's some concern about that in terms of whether that's a good or bad thing. And so there's quite a bit of research underway trying to understand that a little bit more to see, is it a good thing if we separate the cow and the calf? Is it a bad thing? What are the consequences of doing that? So a lot of work is going into that now. And I think that's going to be one of the major things that we're going to at least research and try to understand a little bit better over the next few years.
Yes, that's interesting. I was at the Western Canadian Dairy Seminar last week, and they gave some updates on the codes, right? And they mentioned about the contact between calves. There are some positive things, especially for the calves, right? But like you mentioned, if you have a sick animal, it's important to isolate, right? So perhaps this is something that we need to think about and pay attention. Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, that's the end of this episode, Dave. And I would like to thank you very much for taking the time and to participate. And I also would like to thank everyone that listened to us. I hope you like it. And if possible, please share this episode with your network and help us promoting Dairy to Wealth. But Dave, thank you very much. It was very, very nice.
No, thanks very much for having me.